Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News. A one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Big Jim Willig, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
Hello?
Hey,
here I am. A trash dumpster shows up at Occupy Portland. Police investigate a death on Northeast Halsey. And Jesse Ventura says he will never stand for the national anthem again.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of... Wait for it. Still waiting for it. Man, are we really waiting for it. Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, November 7th, 2011. I still feel like I'm not fully mic'd here. Am I even on?
You're on.
I'm on?
I hear you.
I sound funny to myself. Maybe it's just my head.
Here we go.
All right.
Better?
Yeah, I'll just turn up my headphones so it'll be louder in my head. Anyway. A large 19-cubic-yard trash dumpster is now parked at the corner of Southwest 4th and Madison Streets in downtown Portland in front of Chapman Square. The Occupy Portland protest has been encamped at Chapman and Lansdale Squares for the last month. The trash dumpster showed up sometime over the weekend. There's no word on who donated it. The dumpster is already filled to the top with garbage, and there's no word on when it'll be collected. That's the news.
That's it?
There's a trash can by the park. Woohoo! Last week, local labor coalitions dropped off 6 honey buckets at the camp. Those portable toilets were removed this morning. The protesters have one functioning restroom now, the men's room at Chapman Square.
So they've been downgraded from about a half dozen honey buckets to one bathroom, and then just like a backup dumpster,
right?
Should need be.
Should you need to, I guess, dump your poo?
Is this like?
I guess now you have to poo in your tent and then just like transport it to the dumpster.
Possibly, I guess this is like Occupy Dignity.
I mean, we're not really discouraging them to leave this way. We're just making it even more icky for everyone who has to walk by there.
Of course, this also might be just a an attempt at using chemical warfare as a means of getting the powers that be to actually listen to us now. So instead, they're using the strong scent of human affluence as a means of getting attention. Like, well, we try being peaceful. We tried singing songs, we tried hacky sacking, tried doing that thing with the two sticks, and we're juggling a third stick.
Our obviously our natural hippie stench was not enough.
Yeah.
So
we're having to bump it up a notch. We're taking a page out of GW's book, and we're just gonna sit here, and we're gonna eat a lot of bran, and we're gonna use nature's broom as a way to kind of sweep out
a lot of Thai food from the food carts in the neighborhood. And
sorry about your luck, folks. We gave you the chance to listen. You did not want to hear us.
That's right. We are the 99%, and we smell horrible.
We smell like a good 450 now. We're pushing 7 digits is what we're doing.
Welcome, by the way, to Legion of News.
Yes.
Mr. Rick Emerson is on vacation.
Yes, vacation.
If you can imagine that.
Let's just say that Rick is sitting pensively in a different area as he normally does.
Yes.
He's normally sitting here in my seat, but Big Jim Willig have taken over his spot and allowing Rick to be tense,
right,
in another time zone, possibly.
Yeah, he is somewhere in Mexico, sitting in a chair reading his book about Steve Jobs while his wife goes, come out to the pool! Come on, explore a cave! I'm going to the pyramids! He's like, you just go ahead without me. I'll be fine.
This just in, I'm not interested.
And then he'll come back with the monkeypox. So, a death investigation. But anyway, we do have Mr. Big Jim Mullick sitting in all this week.
That's right.
For Rick Emerson. And he brought in donuts.
I did.
And he brought me a spare Vizo. Mm-hmm. And so I don't care if Rick never comes back.
Oh, well, you don't have to say that. It's
Rick
nice
doesn't
to
bring
hear.
You donuts and Vizo.
He don't bring you donuts anymore?
He don't bring me no donuts. he ain't begots no donuts, that Rick Emerson.
If I had access to painkillers, I would. Oh. I would bring you a bouquet of Percocets.
Oh, you know what Mama likes.
Yeah, I do. I do. I've been hit before, so I know what it's like to keep a mistress happy.
All right. Well,
I believe you're flush.
Oh, my stars. I have a gentleman caller. A death investigation is underway on Halsey Street in Northeast Portland. Police responded to a report of a body at the 10700 block of Halsey just after 7:30 this morning. When police officers arrived, they located a body. Yes, there it is, said the guy who reported it. The police cannily located it. And
him, that guy doing his impersonation of a nap.
Jim, I found it. Yeah. They established a crime scene. Homicide detectives and criminalists from the Forensic Evidence Division were called in to start an investigation into the person's death. Police aren't releasing any other information, such as the person's age, gender, or manner of death. So we, the public, can be of no help to you in your investigation because you're telling us nothing. All we know is, and so if you know of like a dead person of any age or gender on Halsey this morning, you know, go call the police about it.
Will the mystery corpse please sign in?
Former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura is so upset by
Jesse the Body Ventura.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed. Who you can imitate far better than I can because I tried.
You got it. Well, it's
I tried to do my Jesse Ventura earlier and it didn't work at all.
For most professional wrestlers, you really only have to talk with the back of your throat as if the rest of your mouth is just kind of there as a garnish. It's not really needed. So you talk like this, you know, and you just kind of throw in a couple of their mannerisms, if they have a catchphrase or two, and you kind of work from there.
Okay. Well, he was so upset, Mr. Jesse Ventura, by the dismissal of his airport security lawsuit that he threatened Friday to apply for dual citizenship so he can spend more time in his beloved Mexico. Or, he said, he also might run for president of what he labeled, quote, the fascist states of America. Ventura sued the federal government in January, alleging that airport scans and pat-downs amounted to unreasonable search and seizure. A district judge in St. Paul threw out his lawsuit on Thursday, ruling it should have been filed in the Circuit Court of Appeals. Outside the federal courthouse in St. Paul, with a crew from his conspiracy theory cable TV show filming.
Nothing screams credibility like...
like reality TV show. Yeah. Ventura said he hadn't decided whether to continue pressing his lawsuit. He said he wanted to make his case before a jury, not a panel of judges. Ventura has had a titanium hip implanted in him in 2008, set off metal detectors, and that agents previously used handheld wands to scan his body. He said he was subjected to a body pat-down after an airport metal detector went off last November. He said he hasn't flown since and will not fly commercially again. Ventura is a political independent who served one term as governor, and he teased that he might have to run for president to change the policy and a court system that he regards as broken. Moments later, he vowed to apply for Mexican citizenship so he can live there more months of the year. The former Navy SEAL said he had lost his patriotism. And here, because you do him better, I'll let you read the quote at the very bottom of the story there. That's his last.
I will never stand for a national anthem again. I will turn my back and I will raise a fist.
There we go.
That's as close to a Jesse the Body as they didn't recognize Jesse the Body. I mean, the guy wears huge, almost ski goggle-like sunglasses mixed with a cowboy hat and, I kid you not, a feather boa. Hard to miss in a lineup.
Yeah, but see, that's the problem with the whole vigilant, non-profiling plan for mm-hmm. TSA is that whole thing of you can't let somebody skate just because they're famous. You can't not pick somebody randomly because, you know... There's somebody. I mean, that's the thing. I think Kelsey Grammer was picked once. I read this early on when they first started doing the random pulling people out of line and like searching them right after 9/11. And like Kelsey Grammer was one of those people that got pulled out. You're like, Really? You really think that Kelsey Grammer has, like, a bomb in his shoe?
Well, I think also the fact that the TSA have been so vilified over the years since being installed that pretty much the only joy they have left now is whenever one of their favorite celebrities comes through line. You know, they're not just going to let you, like, walk right on by, maybe ask for an autograph. No, no, no. You have the opportunity to touch, possibly even grope to second base your favorite actor and or actress.
This opportunity's never going to come.
Exactly. If they're not big enough that they have their own commercial airline, you know that this is going to be a golden opportunity for you to tell your friends of any possible, you know, growths or, you know, distinguishing marks or scars on the bodies of your favorite actors and actresses.
Well, I think TSA employees also suffer from the same problem that, say, rent-a-cops who work at Rite Aid have. And I'll just go out on a limb and say the hired security guys at press screenings for movies, where they are people who have, they've been given a very small amount of authority and a ridiculous job to do that doesn't make any logical sense most of the time. So the only thing that they can, like really, you know, like they can really lay their hat on, if which is not actually a phrase, but I'm going to try and make it one.
They
can lay their hat on. Is that they could boot their shoe over. I'm just saying words now.
It's a perfectly cromulent phrase that you're drawing together.
But the only thing they can really do then is just take that tiny, tiny little bit of authority that they've been given for the $10 an hour they make and just run roughshod over the people that they have to deal with.
They've gotten drunk with their thimble of power.
You know, it's like, I have a uniform. You have to do what I say.
You respect the Segway, or you do not come into the food court. Do you understand me?
You give me your cell phone before this press screening of this Adam Sandler movie. Because even though you are actually a film critic and just trying to do your job, I don't know you're not pirating this movie to make DVDs in China. How would I know that? You have to go out to your car.
I'm the chilly blue line between anarchy and chaos.
Yeah.
If I'm not here, then the mob rules, and we can't have that. Then there's anarchy. You know, and my father didn't pull strings to get me kicked out of dental school so he could come here and govern over this body owned by Sears and Roebuck respectfully. Now give me your cell phone.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to. He's been going kind of rough at home.
Well, and some sad news.
Oh, no.
Leonard Stone, who played the father of accompanied chronic gumshoer Violet Beauregard on a tour through the Candy Palace and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, has died.
Oh, no.
Granddaughter Lindsay Fryman Borchard told the Associated Press that Stone died of cancer Wednesday in Encinitas, California, a day before his 88th birthday. Really? He couldn't hold out for the cake one day. I bet he wanted to.
Yeah.
He's going, there'll be cake.
I like to think of his cancer as being candy encrusted, that there's like a chocolatey shell with a big C kind of like stamped on it with a jaunty font.
I don't think that happens.
No.
Well, you know, I think cancer is actually the anti-candy.
It's
if candy is like the best thing on earth, cancer is like the polar opposite of candy. Just because they both start with the same three letters does not mean they are related in any way whatsoever. Cancer is as far opposite of candy as you can get.
Well, they'll both get you at least a decent five-letter word score on Scrabble.
Are you buzzing?
Is that me?
A buzz. That
is me. That is my...
Well, Stone was best known as the fast-talking father Sam Beauregard in the 1971 film that starred Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka. Stone watches in horror as his daughter turns into a giant blueberry and utters the famous line, "Violet, you're turning violet, Violet." The Oregon native.
He was paid by the violet.
An Oregon native.
Oh.
He was one of ours. Went on to play recurring characters in many television series, including Barney Miller, Hill Street Blues, and L.A. Law. In 2005.
Fish, you're turning into a fish, fish.
And in 2005, he played Warren Buffett in the Arnold Schwarzenegger TV biopic, See Arnold Run.
Yes, and much like Raul Julia has to bear the shame of Street Fighter II being the last known or the last popular work that your career garnered during the course of your life span. So yeah, that's great. A guy who's managed to pull that kind of cred over his entire career gets known as a side cursory character in a biopic about Arnie.
But he still would always be Violet Beauregard's father. So he always had that to hold on to. But God. But damn cancer. I mean, one more day, he could have had cake. And everyone loves cake.
I love how you're more enraged about his lack of cake getting than his loss of life due to delicious candy-colored cancer.
Maybe I'm projecting a little bit of how I will be feeling when I'm 88 years old and die and riddled with cancer.
If I'm staring down a cake day and an icy-handed death shows up, yeah. Oh, best believe I'm going to be pissed.
Maybe they let him have his cake a day early. Because they knew he might not make it.
Put it in the IV.
Just put it in the blender and stick it in the straw. And just
1,000 parts per million. Isn't that delicious?
Give me my cake. Oklahoma residents are recovering Sunday after a series of earthquakes and aftershocks shook the state and were felt as far away as Wisconsin. An unusual experience for many more used to scanning the skies for natural disasters. A magnitude 4.7 earthquake shook areas from Texas to Missouri early Saturday and was followed by a magnitude 5.6 quake just before 11 p.m. The latter was the state's strongest on record, according to reporting by the Associated Press. Since Saturday night, the area has been struck by no less than 10 smaller quakes or aftershocks. Residents told of falling furniture, cracked walls, and roaring sounds.
Well, roaring sounds?
That would be the monsters. And one person has been reported injured. A 25-foot tower separated from an administration building and collapsed at St. Gregory's University in Shawnee, Oklahoma. Oklahoma City resident Noah, N-O-E-H, Noah Morales, told the Oklahoman, "It woke me out of a dead sleep. I felt the whole house shaking. I jumped and ran outside to see what was going on."
See, it was afoot.
Thousands leaving Oklahoma State's Boone Pickens Stadium after Oklahoma's Cowboys defeated Kansas State were unsettled by the largest quake, which lasted nearly a full minute. Though the state does not sit on a major plate border, local seismologist Austin Holland told the Oklahoman that the quake came from movement along complex and prominent Seminole uplift fault structure.
Isn't that called tectonic plate where I'm from?
Tectonic.
Have you ever been privy to an earthquake firsthand?
Oh, hell yeah. I grew up in Southern California.
Oh, jeez.
I was through a couple there. And I moved here to Oregon in 98. It was like November 98. And I lived here, I swear to God, less than a month when we were hit with, like, I think the biggest earthquake they've ever had here. And I was in bed.
It was you.
I was in bed, and I felt this rumbling, and then it kept going and kept going. And I swear, my soon-to-be ex-husband, which is a long story, we'll get into that some other time, but he was sleeping in the living room. And I yelled from the bedroom. I yelled, "You're effing kidding me!"
"Oh, everything's my fault."
But it's like I moved to Oregon and boom, hit with an earthquake. So yeah, but I've been through a few earthquakes.
Which are better, Oregon earthquakes or California earthquakes?
Oh, California earthquakes, definitely.
Oh, well, thanks.
Oregon earthquakes are sort of a week.
They're too hipstery.
They don't commit. A California earthquake, man, it wants to kill you. When you're in an earthquake in California, you know it. Here in Oregon, we have earthquakes on a regular basis, and you usually find out about it, like, on Twitter.
Yeah, they're passive-aggressive quakes.
Yeah, you didn't feel it at all, and then somebody goes, "I think I felt an earthquake," and then you hear about it on the news, and you go, like, I was unaware that this happened. What? That's not an earthquake. An earthquake is when things start falling off the shelves, and you dive under the table or for the door jamb because you feel like your roof might come in. That's an earthquake, my friend.
What was the year that Cali had their last really big one where the highways were falling
that
down?
That was like
early
99.
Or is it 99?
Yeah, it was late in the 90s because I know that happened within the first few months that I had moved here, because I only missed that earthquake by a day.
Oh, wow.
I had gone down to L.A. to pick up a car that I was driving back up and picked up a friend of mine in Santa Monica. And then we, like, spent the whole day driving up to Oregon. And the next morning, She got up early and was watching the news, and she woke me up. And it was one of those things that, like, 24 hours earlier, we had been on one of those freeway overpasses that collapsed in Santa Monica. And so it's like, had we left a day later, we might be dead. Bum, bum, bum.
Up high. Yeah, it's time for mimosas.
But yeah, that was very scary, watching that on the news and doing that thing of calling people that I do and asking
them if they were... massive quake the day after you leave. You get up here, and within the span of, say, a solstice, there is another quake. Biggest on record. You ever get the feeling that maybe Mother Nature's got a hit out on Don Taylor?
I am the earthquake whisperer.
Yeah, so it's all about body language, and you know,
I can just I know their ways.
How about we just move along to another story?
Right. The Associated Press reports that a new woman will come forward today to accuse GOP presidential hopeful Herman Cain of sexual harassment.
No,
this woman and her lawyer, Gloria Allred.
Oh, gee.
Plan to hold a news conference in New York later today.
Sounds like someone's wearing doggy biscuit underwear. Oh, man.
While it's not exactly clear from the report, it appears as though the woman, at least the fourth to accuse Cain of inappropriate actions, plans to appear in person, which would be the first time that one of Cain's accusers has stepped forward publicly to make their claims.
What do you think the money's on that she's a looker?
Why not? I mean, I don't
she's
know.
Confident enough to yeah. accuse, and then she wants to appear.
That's true.
You know, like in front of.
And Gloria Allred is representing her, and Allred usually knows that the more photogenic your client, the better your
chances.
The more
sympathetic, yeah.
Yeah, Allred is no fool. she's the devil, but
oh
she's
my
no
god,
fool.
Yeah.
It's also not clear if the woman actually filed a sexual harassment complaint against Cain. The first two women from the original story did file complaints and subsequently received cash settlements. The third woman did not file a formal complaint, but recently told the Associated Press she had considered filing one against Cain over what she considered aggressive and unwanted behavior. Gloria Allred, by the way, has represented a number of clients in the middle of major media stories, including two of Tiger Woods' mistresses, and porn star Ginger Lee, who played a minor role in Anthony Weiner's sexting scandal.
So how long before the spin comes out and Cain tries to use this as, like, you know, the frat guy D-bag party platform angle? Like, obviously you want a candidate that knows how to get down and get things done.
Well, we've talked about that, Rick and I have. It's like, there's a point at which, why don't you just use it?
Yeah.
You just go, come on, ladies. I mean, who are you going to vote for? Him or somebody that you know, has what it takes. Obviously, I am appealing to the constituents, if you know what I mean. I mean, why not? It's either gonna sink him at this point, or he could just embrace it.
Yeah, if you're gonna miss it, dude, miss it by a mile.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do a little science news.
You want to do some science news? Let's
not really, but we kind of are obligated contractually.
It's
the people demand it.
Science on the March. Here's your Science on the March for this Monday, November 7th, 2011.
The global output of heat-trapping carbon dioxide jumped by the biggest amount on record, according to the U.S. Department of Energy, a sign of how feeble the world's efforts are at slowing man-made global warming. The new figures for 2010 mean that levels of greenhouse gases are higher than the worst-case scenario outlined by climate experts just 4 years ago. The more we talk about the need to control emissions, the more they're growing, said John Riley, the co-director of MIT's Joint Program on the Science and Policy of Global Change.
What does MIT know?
The world pumped about 564 million more tons of carbon into the air in 2010 than it did in 2009.
That's called progress.
It's an increase of 6%.
There we go.
We're number one. Oh, wait. It's the world. It's not just the U.S. The amount of extra pollution eclipses the individual emissions of all but three countries, China, the United States, and India, the world's top producers of greenhouse gases.
I wonder if it eclipses their numbers or just their visibility from where we are at this point.
Greg Marland, a professor of geology at Appalachian State University who helped calculate the figures, says it's a monster increase that is unheard of. Extra pollution in China and the U.S. account for more than half the increase in emissions last year. So we are number one.
Thank you.
Yay! Damn China.
USA.
It's a big jump, said Tom Bowden, director of the Energy Department's Carbon Dioxide Information Analysis Center at Oak Ridge National Lab. From an emissions standpoint, the global financial crisis seems to be over. Bowden said that in 2010, people were traveling and manufacturing was up worldwide, spurring the use of fossil fuels, the major contributor of man-made climate change. India and China are big users of coal. Burning coal is the biggest carbon source worldwide, and emissions from that jumped nearly 8% in 2010. Riley said, the good news is that these economies are growing rapidly, so everyone ought to be for that, right? Broader economic improvements in poor countries has been bringing living improvements to people. Doing it with increasing reliance on coal, however, is imperiling the world.
I love the concept of clean coal propaganda that's coming out, where they're showing these average everyday Joes in a boxing ring fighting for their lives, and they keep getting back up. And at the end, it's trying to give you the illusion that the coal lobbyists are everyday people like you and me struggling against the... have you seen these,
no.
These ads?
No, so the ad is basically to make me feel sorry for the lobbyists?
And the usage of coal and how they're trying to keep clean coal on the ballot and as a viable form of fuel and energy.
I don't think there is such a thing as clean coal.
Yeah, that alone is an oxymoron.
Yeah.
It's like dry hydroelectric power.
Or cancer that's like candy.
You've got an infection of the nougat center of your body. It's not looking good.
I think we can come in right around this side and break through the candy shell. And then...
Your boyfriend's back and there's going to be trouble. Hey now, your boyfriend's back. The big hunk. That was the song they used for Big Hunk back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry.
Your brain is like an attic filled with just containers.
Empty candy wrappers.
Candy wrappers. Spiders are very agile.
Yeah, kind of know.
And some can even jump. I don't know if you're aware of that. They owe this capability to their hydraulically operated limbs.
Oh, great.
Researchers have now designed a mobile robot modeled on the same principle.
Kill it. Kill it with fire.
That moves spider legs.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Nightmare machines. Awesome. So glad we've got that market cornered.
Created using a 3D printing process, this lightweight can explore terrain that is beyond human reach. You know, it can...
So I've got nowhere to go.
No, it can scuttle under your door. It can, jump over your shower curtain. You know.
Tear the roof off your house.
Enviably agile and purposeful, the mobile robot makes its way through grounds rendered off-limits to humans as a result of chemical accident. Depressions, ruts, and other obstacles are no match for this eight-legged high-tech journeyman. I love this story. I don't know who wrote this story, but I love this story.
Doc Ock, perhaps?
Its mission, with a camera and measurement equipment on board, it will provide emergency responders with an image of the situation on the ground, along with any data about poisonous substances.
It's
a good spider robot.
Effing killing me. Great. So here's a scenario for you. I'll paint this. paint this one for you. Here's Don Taylor, mild-mannered, every day, liked by people everywhere, trapped in a burning building. Send in the rescue spider.
Yeah.
So we send in this eight-legged octa nightmare, and it just tears into the room. Oh, it's okay. It can smell your fear. That's how it tracked you.
I'm trapped under the rubble of a collapsed building, and I just hear, and then right in my face is a spider robot.
Yeah.
Just looking at me.
Yeah. Did they have that in the Matrix?
And I can't move.
Yeah.
Because I'm trapped under rubble.
Yes,
put a clown mask on it, and it's my worst nightmare.
The onboard computer shows Dawn hugging fire because she's trying to take the easy way out.
So as a real spider would, it keeps four legs on the ground at all times.
Good.
While the other four turn and ready themselves for the next step, or, you know, to kill you.
To rend the flesh from your bones?
Even in its appearance, this artificial articulate creature resembles a spider. And no wonder. The natural specimen provided the model for researchers at the Fraunhofer Institute for Manufacturing, Engineering, and Automation.
Thank you, Germans, yet again.
Germans. Some models can even jump. This is possible using hydraulically operated bellows drives that serve as joints and keep limbs mobile. With no muscles to stretch their legs, these creatures build up high levels of body pressure that they then use to pump fluid into their limbs. Shooting fluid into the legs extends them. Dippel-ing Ralph Becker, I don't know what that means, who's one of the scientists, said, I don't know what dippling means.
Doesn't work well with children is the direct English translation.
Says, we took this mobility principle and applied it to our bionic computer-controlled lightweight robot. Its eight legs and body are also fitted with elastic drive bellows that operate pneumatically to bend and extend its artificial limbs.
Why do we pick the spider as the machine? Why not something cute? You know, like the rescue panda.
Well, there's some people that are making, like, rescue dogs robots. They're four-legged, and they call them Alpha Dog and Big Dog. And they look kind of like horses, but they're naming them at least after dogs. And they could, once they could complete them, there's no reason why they couldn't put some, like, fur on them and maybe, like, a fake dog head so it would look like a cute puppy.
Yeah, those will
this
be...
spider,
those will...
there's no way to disguise a robot spider and make it unappealing.
Yeah, they can't. There's nothing they can do. Those dogs of which you speak will be taken down by the Japanese robo deer ticks that will give it a virtual Lyme disease, thus having the robo dogs that have to be put down, sadly.
Yeah, no. Damn those dogs.
God, really? Rescue spiders.
Yeah.
Who?
Robotic, hydraulic-legged rescue spiders.
I can just see a guy with slicked back hair and a monocle like, no, it's the people. They will love this.
We shall make it look like a spider.
Us Germans are not a warlike people, Mr. Burns.
A company called iFi has built something called the Mobile X2. It's an 8-gigabyte SDHC memory card with built-in Wi-Fi. So if your camera is SDHC friendly, it's compatible. It comes with a USB card reader that makes installation easy. And from your computer, you then program the card to connect to your network. You can specify up to 32 private networks, set it for transferring media. Then, again, it's an 8-gigabyte card. As you take pictures and video, it automatically sends them to a specified folder on your computer via Wi-Fi. The iFi Center, desktop software for managing your options and or all your favorite online sharing sites. It lets you send email, text, Facebook updates, or tweet. So you can actually get one of these in your phone or in your car, in your camera. And what it will do is operate as a Wi-Fi as well as a memory card, and you can use it to just send stuff off the card immediately rather than just storing everything forever and then having to offload it later. They also have something called direct mode, where you can skip the middleman and send JPEGs and videos right to your Android or an iOS device.
I just want to know, where is all the space coming from? I know it's virtual space, but still, I mean, is the internet just that vast and limitless that we can just continue to crank it filled with, you know, cats playing keyboards and various other video of people with sped up voices and crotch shots from grandchildren?
I don't know. I've wondered that myself, too, if it's going to be one of those things like, you know, like space. We always figured space was like limitless, so it was okay for us just to leave all our old satellites up there and stuff. And then we started realizing, no, eventually if you put enough crap up there, things will start running into each other. So this is one of those things where, oh, I never pulled up the text box. I'm sure Thomas Gill right now is screaming, you know, at his keyboard and pounding his fists.
His horde of helper spiders. As we speak.
No, that's Seamus. Seamus is the one with the underground lair, his snowy fortress, who sends out his spiders to take over the world.
Rescue spiders. Why didn't I think of that? Facepalm.
Okay, hold on.
Shaking his fist.
I'm logging on to the chat now because I'm foolish and didn't do that before. Okay.
It's Monday. Mondays are made for a couple of rough snafus here and there.
Okay, and of course I'm failing at logging in too. So let's see if we do it. And finally, in our science, yeah. I don't know what I'm doing. Vineyards often lose thousands of dollars worth of grapes each year due to bird foraging, but a team of researchers supports a clever solution to the ongoing problem: bring in a bigger bird. The presence of a single falcon can potentially result in savings of $234 a hectare. Hectare. How do you pronounce hectare?
I think hectare. Okay. That sounds about right.
For the Sauvignon Blanc variety of grapes, and $236 per hectare for Pinot Noir grapes, wrote Sarah Cross and her team in the journal Conservation Biology. For the study, Cross and her colleagues, who are all from the University of Canterbury's School of Biological Sciences, examined whether introduction to the vineyards of the New Zealand falcon a species listed as threatened by the New Zealand Department of Conservation, affected the abundance of four species of passerine birds, which are blackbirds, song thrushes, starlings, and silver eyes, which are considered to be vineyard pests, or affected the amount of economic loss due to grape damage. Blackbirds, song thrushes, and starlings all eat whole grapes and even entire bunches. Silver eyes just poke holes in them.
It's so nice
They're
to
just
see.
Bastards.
Bastards of the bird community. It's so nice to see that even birds have bar flies. That they're problem alcoholics, even in the animal kingdom, ideally.
Yes. Anyway, it's hard to blame them. They're hungry. And then there's row after row of delicious fruit waiting for them. So, you know, and they're birds. It's not like, you know, they're reasoning. These grapes belong to someone else. I must not eat them. So they decide, though, that these birds serve as prey for falcons. So so you get yourself a falcon, and they will scare away all the little birds. Because, you know, they go, eek, falcon, aye. And then they or whatever birds say. And then they leave.
The falcons, I think of them as saying aye.
Also, if the birds aren't scared away, the falcons will just eat them.
Yeah. Problem solved.
So they reported that the introduction of falcons to vineyards was associated with a significant decrease in the abundance of introduced passerines and a 95% reduction in the number of grapes removed relative to vineyards without falcons. So there you go. If you have, if you're growing grapes and the little birds are poking holes in them or eating them and you don't like that, get a falcon.
Yeah, it's cheaper than, you know, hiring the neighborhood boys with pellet guns to sort of sit in the underbrush and wait
less
for
fun.
Yeah, true.
Although I guess watching your falcon like take out some birds, could some little jerk birds that just keep poking holes in your grapes, that could be enjoyable.
You could also play Highway to the Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins on a loop. These are other things that will.
Now I'm going to have that in my head.
You are welcome
day.
For that. Got see. It. It's not all donuts and Vizo.
Damn it.
Don Taylor. There's an ugly side to co-hosting with Big Jim. I am sorry. Yeah.
Sad. That's all the science.
Science.
Well, you'll be sad to know, maybe, I don't know, maybe you won't care, that Target will be closing its location at Northeast Gleason in the Gateway District. Employees are being offered an option to transfer to other nearby Target stores. Target says it's closing the Portland store after carefully considering the location's financial performance. The Target Corporation opened the Gateway location in 1996. It will be officially closed for business on January 28th of 2012. The company spokeswoman says Target shoppers can shop at other Target stores. There's one on Southeast Washington, one on Northeast Halsey, one on Sunnyside, the one out by Lloyd Center.
Yeah.
There's Targets aplenty. But apparently the one at the Gateway, which is near the Sad Mall, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is, actually.
The saddest mall. Mall 205.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I worked out there for a period of time chasing shoplifters.
Did you?
So, yeah, I got to see the ugly
side. At the actual Target?
Not at the Target, at the Tower Records that used to be out there. And, yeah, needless to say, because of the... we got a lot of the runoff from Fred Meyer's due to the fact that their security system was a lot more advanced than ours was. They had full-color monitors that could zoom in, zoom out, and had sound. We had these, like, static, black-and-white, just old...
beta machines.
Yeah, really. You know, like with a hand crank rewind. And, but, yeah, so when people got tired of getting caught... at Fred Meyer's, they would come over to us, who was like right next door, and so they would just rip us off left and right.
Oh God!
So
I miss that Tower Records though, because that was a swell place to shop. Because I mean, not only did you have like the videos and the DVDs and the CDs and stuff, but it had like a really cool, like just goofy gift section.
Yeah,
with all of the, like, you know, you could get your Kiss action figures and your AC/DC lunchboxes and whatnot over there. There was a lot of really cool stuff there. I bought a couple of my Living Dead dolls at that Tower Records store.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that I got. I'm just going to shut that down I don't have to
turn
listen
that
to
back
it.
Up when you need
we
it.
Know there's a teletype machine going right now.
We're not fooling anyone into thinking we're actually in a newsroom.
Cigarette smoke hanging in the air.
Please, if only.
Empty Chinese food containers littering the table. No.
Copy boy.
Some of me a brandy sifter. No, the I got a lot of good stuff there because when the stuff would sit on the sales shelf long enough, if it didn't go, it went to the clearance table, and if it didn't sell at the clearance table, then they brought it back and they sold it to the employees for literally pennies on the dollar. So I was able to stock up on all kinds of Simpson memorabilia.
Oh, yeah.
I had all the books that went into detail about each individual episode. I had the comic series that also came out. I had all of the different Simpson stuffed, not really stuffed animals, but like stuffed figurines that came with like little bases so they would stand up no matter where you put them. And subsequently, I've given them all away. I gave I had the Little Lisa, was it Little Miss? Was it Little Miss Urban Achievement? No, that was Big Lebowski. the princess one that where Lisa, the previous winner, got struck by lightning, so she got like the scepter and the crown.
Yeah,
it was
okay.
All partially melted. So yeah, I had all these different Simpson character figurines that ultimately I realized, hey, Jim, you're 30 and you still got stuffed animals. Maybe time to grow up a little bit. Maybe donate these to somebody else.
It'd be nice to get laid once in a while.
You know, I'm just skyballing ideas here. So,
but skyballing, that's another new phrase we've invented today.
It's Cromulent Monday on the Big Jim and Don Taylor Show. Rick Emerson, wherever you are, we miss you.
All right, where are we time? Oh, let's do another story here before we get to the entertainment. Do you want to hear about a stupid overdose attempt, or do you want to hear about boobs?
I think we both know the answer to that question. Thank you.
Overdose it is.
Oh, curses.
No, I'll tell you the boob story.
Thank you.
Two women accused of, quote, unnatural and lascivious acts, unquote, involving exposed breasts, got busted following an incident outside a Jensen Beach lounge. This is, of course, in Florida. A Martin County Sheriff's Sergeant on foot patrol in the Rockstar Lounge parking lot about 12:45 a.m. on November 3rd saw two women exit the establishment. The ladies talked loudly, used profanity, and got the attention of several men in the parking lot of the business. This is my expletive, one of the women is quoted as saying. But I, out of context, I'm not sure what exactly she was saying.
I would imagine like a B word, perhaps.
Maybe, or the
Biatch.
P word. Because
Pentecostal?
Yes, that's it.
Well, my Pentecostal right here.
She did not say, these are my expletives, which
yeah.
I think we would know exactly what she was talking about at that point. So women generally, there's only one like lascivious thing that they'd probably be showing off. That is, like, singular.
Yeah.
So, one of the men approached the women and appeared to be taking photos. I just wish the story told me what the expletive was. Now that's bothering me. A group of onlookers began forming while one of the men was taking pictures. The report states, as I approached the subjects, I observed the two females engaged in an unnatural and lascivious act in public view. One woman, later identified as Christiane Taylor, 27, was engaged in a particularly close form of contact with the right exposed breast of 33-year-old Regina Shriner. Taylor and Shriner were arrested on an unnatural and lascivious act charge, which I guess is something that you could get arrested for in Florida.
There's like a whole like rainbow of vague laws that one could potentially infracture, causing them to be incarcerated.
Oh, they need them in Florida.
Yeah.
You've got to be covered for every eventuality in Florida. Well, I tried to rape her with a stick of gum and a dead duck.
Well,
we've got a law for that. This is Florida.
Mastication with a deceased mallard in the third degree. It does cover all sexual assault.
I came into the Starbucks and I rubbed shaving cream on a little girl's head while muttering to myself. We have a law for that too.
Were you muttering in English or in a foreign language, sir? Well,
because if it's a foreign language, then Homeland Security gets involved.
Diplomatic immunity.
So the other woman was arrested on a disorderly conduct charge. So I guess one of the ladies was being affectionate to one of the other ladies' boobies in the parking lot, and a guy was taking pictures and men were watching. I guess. I don't know.
Well, you know, after seeing the accused, wouldn't the men also kind of be, you know, infracturing of some kind of a law? Because they would be supporting, if not encouraging, of said lascivious act. I feel the story needs a little bit more, you know, substance. It feels like it's all like stovetop, no turkey. There's no,
yes.
Or no, all turkey, no stovetop. Basically, no meat
in, no, you're in right the first time, because turkey would be the meat in that analogy.
Ah, okay.
So therefore, it would
it
be
all stovetop, no
turkey.
Meat. Okay.
Right.
It's hard work making all these new phrases
up. I know.
Up. Man.
Talking is hard. Why are we doing this? Let's do some entertainment news.
I love entertainment news.
Ah. Well, Andy Rooney, whose weekly commentary on CBS's 60 Minutes made him a household name, died Friday in New York City at the age of 92 because Rick Emerson went on vacation.
Thanks, Rick.
Longtime listeners of The Rick Emerson Show know that whenever Rick goes on vacation, celebrities start dropping like flies. He was talking about it just last week, and he said, somebody said we should start a pool as to who will die when he's out of town. And I immediately said, well, Andy Rooney. So it might be partly my fault that Andy Rooney is dead.
Well, I think you both shoulder at least a little bit of the responsibility for the loss of life here. I know that for a fact, whenever Rick announces that he does have a vacation in the works, Hollywood insiders then alert
the oldest people.
Basically, get your affairs in order as Mr. Emerson is going on vacay.
Then again, he was 92, so it was kind of a gimme, really. Rooney stopped appearing on the show just last month and was hospitalized soon after. A CBS statement said he died of complications after a minor operation. Rooney grew up in Albany, New York, and attended Colgate University before being drafted into the Army in 1941. During his service, the son of a paper worker got a job working for Stars and Stripes, where he was awarded a Bronze Star for reporting on the invasion in France. But most Americans learned of Mr. Rooney much later, after he'd come home and entered the television business as a writer for Walter Cronkite. A special that Rooney produced and appeared in, Mr. Rooney Goes to Washington, won a Peabody Award in 1975. His first commentary for 60 Minutes, which later became A Few Minutes with Andy Rooney, aired on July 2nd, 1978. 1,097 segments later,
jeez,
Rooney was perhaps the most famous and well-loved curmudgeon in the country.
I personally love Andy Rooney, and just the fact that he had a job where he's like, you know what I hate? The things in my drawer. Nothing seems to make sense. I've got gum that I don't even chew anymore.
Yeah, we would not. I think people would not be so inclined to listen to what we do
if
it wasn't for growing up with this guy sitting there going, you know what bothers me? Socks. What's the deal with socks? I mean, I already got my shoes on. My feet are covered. Why should I have to put on socks for? It's like, and we found that charming. And now, you and I can sit here and like complain about like hookers and plastic bag laws.
Thank you, Mr. Rooney.
And people love us, so thank you, Mr. Rooney.
And Mr. Emerson for taking his life.
Yes. Oh, Rick Emerson, I hope you're proud. Enjoy your blood vacation.
Yeah. Dude was 93, Rick. Really?
Really?
And yet Justin Bieber still walks these streets.
Also, Violet Beauregard's dad
didn't
even get his cake. Also Emerson's fault. Over the weekend,
blood count continues to rise. Mr. Emerson is unavailable for comment.
Start a tote board on the wall here. just hash marks on the wall. He comes back. There's seven marked up. Well, that's your body count.
Yeah, John, Stephen King is going to write a short story about George Clooney and Johnny Depp and a few other actors in a panic room somewhere, just hold up because they know at any minute this is going to be the end. It's like the mist.
Count down to the end of Emerson's vacation when they can come back out into the fresh air and sunlight again. Over the weekend, Kim Kardashian flew to Minnesota to visit her husband, Chris Humphries, who she filed for divorce from last week after 72 long days of marriage, during which time she really, really tried to make it work. People also cite a source that said the two planned to meet with a pastor who married them as well. The 31-year-old reality star recently returned from a trip to Australia, where she told the press that the whole ordeal makes her, quote, kind of want to step back a little bit from the spotlight. While Kardashian was en route to Minnesota to visit Humphries, Saturday Night Live was skewering their split, and the media blitz, which has followed, in a skit called Kim's Fairy Tale Divorce. While there's no word on whether Kim Kardashian has seen the segment, her family, who were also parodied in the sketch, seemed to enjoy it. Khloe Kardashian tweeted, ha! I just saw the SNL skit that they did, and I could not stop laughing, LOL. To which Kourtney Kardashian responded, I peed!
Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, they're classy. After being sentenced to 30 days for violating probation, Lindsay Lohan was in jail for just 4 hours before being released early Monday morning.
That totally counts.
She was let out early for overcrowding, which is not uncommon for California inmates. To serve.
How many other dingbat, fire crotch celebutards did they have in the jail at the time?
They were all full up.
Just ugly with...
Oh, yeah. It was just... Well, there have been all of these, like... There have been a lot of these minor B-level TV stars getting pulled in for DUIs lately. So they're just chock full. So, you know, the Lohan suite was already occupied by some guy from 16 and pregnant, and they had to...
How painful is that, though? You show up, and there's actually a cell at the county jail named after you, and you can't use it because somebody's already in there. That's just... Oh.
That is irony,
yeah,
my friend.
That's the definition.
Irony. As explained by People, there is a federal mandate in which nonviolent offenders are routinely sent home early after serving only a fraction of their sentences. Lohan isn't completely off the hook, however. She's currently not allowed to leave the country and can only leave California for work reasons. She will have to complete a total of... Like, that's going to happen.
Yeah. You need to get a job first there, Lilo.
She has to complete a total of 53 days of community service at Los Angeles' county morgue and 18 psychotherapy sessions by March 29th. If she successfully follows through with these demands, and let's take odds right now on whether or not that'll happen.
I think Vegas just exploded.
The court will terminate her probation. If she's found in violation, she could wind up sentenced to another 270 days, of which she'll probably serve, like, what?
45 minutes?
10 hours or something, yeah.
She'll do it online.
That's it. Avril Lavigne.
Still alive?
She was jumped by 5 people last night. And she was involved in a fight outside the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel about 1 a.m. with her BF, Brody Jenner, who was smashed in the head with a bottle. Now Avril is speaking out about the incident, saying, "I don't fight. I don't believe in it. To clear things up, I got attacked by 5 people last night out of nowhere. Not cool. My face is effed."
Not cool.
She added, as in black eye, bloody nose, hair ripped out, scratches, bruises, and cuts. So not okay to be abusive to others. Violence is never the answer. By the time the cops got to the scene, the alleged combatants had all left, including Avril Lavigne, although Brody Jenner stuck around and talked to the police.
Well, there's that.
How we doing that?
We still got about a little bit of time.
Yeah, we got so many interesting things. By interesting, I mean not really, but a judge accepted a guilty plea Monday on behalf of Vince Neil, and his lawyer paid a $1,000 fine to close a misdemeanor case stemming from a confrontation between the singer and his ex-girlfriend Vegas casino lounge.
Did he kill another dude?
No, he shoved his girlfriend in a casino, and she filed like battery charges against him. So, Neil, 50. Didn't appear in person while attorney Vince Neil
is 50.
Vince Neil and Ralph Macchio, same age.
Oh,
who would have thought?
Yeah, wow.
Both 50.
High Karate Kid.
His attorney Richard Schoenfeld acknowledged that his client pointed and cursed at Las Vegas entertainment reporter Alicia Jacobs and two of her friends in a casino comedy club on March 25th.
At a comedy club?
Yeah, I can't remember who they were there to see. It was some...
Michael Richards, perhaps?
God, let me see if I can figure this out. I can't remember who they were to see, but it was kind of... It made the story all the more bizarre.
The actor formerly known as Biff Tannen from the Back to the Futures franchise.
I can't remember. I've read in one of the stories covering this who they were there to see, but I can't freaking remember.
You know better than to start some S at a Carrot Top show, because the man for his laughable,
he's all roided up and he will just rage out on you.
Yeah, and there's nothing worse than getting like a hula hoop with a steak knife taped to it, thrown at you from some hulking ginger on stage who's just got nothing but anger issues.
Yeah, he's just a roided out ginger nightmare, and then he has props.
Yeah.
He can damage you with them.
People sit down and are quiet and respectful and turn off all their cell phones.
Oh, you laugh at all of his jokes.
Absolutely.
That's why everyone still thinks that he's popular. Because people are afraid to not laugh.
America lives under the tyranny of Carrot Top.
Matthew Fox, former Lost and Party of Five star, party of fists, more like it, is firing back with a countersuit against a female bus driver who sued Fox in September for allegedly socking her in her groin when she demanded him and she denied him entry onto a party bus outside a Cleveland bar. According to Fox's complaint, a copy of which was obtained by, who else, TMZ, the driver, Heather Borman, is lying about her allegations that the actor struck her during a physical altercation between the two. Cleveland's Finest briefly detained the actor, but the incident did not result in criminal charges. The suit by the 29-year-old mother of three claimed that a severely intoxicated Fox became angry when she refused his request to let him join a private bachelor party on a bus. According to court documents, when Fox persisted, she blocked his way, prompting him to attack her suddenly without provocation, punching her in the crotch, as well as her right breast and arms and legs. Borman claims she hit back to defend herself, cutting and bloodying his lip.
Nice!
However, in the countersuit, the actor contends the driver and assaulted him, and he alleges he suffered public hatred, contempt, ridicule, and shame. So he's asking for unspecified damages, claiming he lost out on a number of jobs due to negative publicity generated by the incident.
Yeah, because they were just about ready to beat down the door. Bring back that.
Wasn't there an incident with him last year too, having to do with some stripper in Bend that he got handsy with some stripper in Bend or something was going on. It was really a sad story that not only was he getting bad publicity for poor behavior in a strip club, but it was a strip club in Bend, Oregon. So that's all our entertainment news.
Well, I think we should maybe bring down the curtain on this this Monday.
Must we?
I think we must, but okay. The good news is...
I can eat this half a donut. That's the good news.
There's all kinds of good news. But there's still more show to come. After this brief musical interlude, we will start the Monday, November 7th episode of The Rick Emerson Show, featuring myself, Big Jim Willig, and Don Taylor. The Legion of News comes to you from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Wizard Thomas Gill. Our executive producer is Bruce Agler, and our chief of staff is Cheryl Kennecoa. Stay tuned. Our guest on the Rick Emerson Show will be Aaron Duran from Geek in the City, as well as a few other incredible... he's just awesome all around. So stay tuned. There'll be more to come.